This is a poem that I wrote years ago now, and I came across it recently and thought, this fits the moment. it's about a moment when I walked into a room and there were two young men talking with each other, and one of them was boasting about having put something in a young woman's drink. And I don't know what actually happened, because I just looked at that young man for a long time until he looked a little ashamed of himself and the conversation stopped, and then I left the room. So I don't know if he was making things up or if he had done that. But this is what I thought about, I think, while I was driving home. That's right, boy, you apologize to me, not because I caught you, but because I am the goddess, and I am always in the room, whether you see me or not. Do not apologize to me because I suddenly remind you of your sister who needs to be protected. Apologize and change your life because I am the goddess in one of her fiery forms. And I will take from you what you fail to cherish. Apologize not because what you did is illegal, but because the young woman is not yours, ever, even if you act like you love her. Apologize and beg for mercy, not because I am vindictive, but because the goddess knows the heart, and yours will close in around your life if you live like this.
Good morning. If you don't know me, I'm Lisa Bunker. Kendra asked me if I would be willing to read this poem, which I said I would love to do. If I wanted to characterize the mood of this poem, I would say joyous defiance. And it is also very much in the slam style of poetry writing. So I'm going to try to give it some of that energy, and you are welcome to participate in that. That was lovely, but it's not the mood. It's not. We're doing a mood shift right here. So, yes. Thank you. One thing you can do at a slam, if you like a line, is this. So let's just practice that a little bit. Okay. This poem was written just a few weeks ago by a poet and activist in Seattle, Washington, named Alyssa Chavez, and was published in the Seattle Review of Books on the 3rd of January, and it went viral. It's called Revenge. Since you mention it, I think I will start that race war. I could have swung either way, but now I'm definitely spending the next 4 years converting your daughters to lesbianism. I am going to eat all your guns, swallow them lock, stock, and barrel, and spit bullet casings onto the dinner table. I'll give birth to an army of mixed-race babies with fathers from every continent and genders to outnumber the stars. My legion of multiracial babies will be intersectional as all get out, and your swastikas will not be enough to save you. Because, real talk, you didn't stop the future from coming. You just delayed our coronation. We have the same deviant haircuts we had yesterday. We are still getting gay married like nobody's business, because it's still nobody's business. There's a Muslim kid in Kansas who has already written the schematic for the robot that will steal your job in manufacturing, and that robot will also be gay. So get over it. We didn't manifest the mountain by speaking its name. The buildings here are not on your side just because you make them spray-painted accomplices. Even the earth found common cause with us, the way you trample us both. Oh yeah, there will be signs and rainbow-colored drum circles and folks arguing ideology until even I want to punch them, but I won't because they're my family in that blood of the covenant sense. If you've never loved someone like that, you cannot outwaltz us. We have all the good dancers anyway. I'll confess I don't know if I'm alive right now. I haven't heard my heart beat in days. I keep holding my breath for the moment the plane goes down and I have to save enough oxygen to get my friends through. But I finally found the argument against suicide, and it's us. We're the effigies that haunt America's nights harder the longer they spend burning us. We are scaring people just by spreading, by refusing to die. What are we but a fire? We know everything we do is so the kids after us will be able to follow something towards safety. What can I call us but lighthouse? Of course I'm terrified. Of course I'm a shroud. And of course it's not fair. But rest assured, anxious America, you brought your fists to a glitter fight. This is a taco truck rally, and all you have is coleslaw. You cannot deport our minds. We won't hold funerals for our potential. We have always been what makes America great.
Now it's glittery up here. And Lisa predicts it will be for months. Years. I think that's good. It was my idea. I wanted the glitter. Because I think it's part of how we live in this moment is to hold on to the fear and the glitter. The somber music and the joyful defiance, and try to hold the whole scope of what we live with, from the most personal to the most global. And that's why we have to get together maybe more often, because there's a lot to hold, and there's a lot to hear from each other, and there's a lot to absorb. I meant to tell you earlier that the reason I'm wearing my black robe and my hiking boots, this is what I marched in the streets of Boston yesterday, and apparently I was on the news. Mary reported this to me this morning, I, of course, missed it. I was there, as many of you were, in a sea of pink hats that has caused a nationwide shortage of pink yarn. Have any of you tried to purchase pink yarn recently? Apparently it's very hard to get a hold of. We can cause all sorts of things to happen. And I think that that's protesting at its best, peaceful, playful, and profound. Turning a story around so that it has a different meaning and has different power. We arrived at the Boston Common and we could not hear most of what was said by the speakers because we were so far away from where the loudspeakers were. We did see the hats and the rainbow drum circles, and people of all ages, all abilities, all genders, from I think every country on this planet. And the signs. Such a fantastic array of signs. I was with my sister and my mother and my husband. My sister was wearing her sweatshirt from her women's college. And at various points in the march, I saw some of you. It was a fascinating experience to be walking through the streets of Boston with thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and then have familiar faces swirl out of the throngs and then disappear again. As we were coming down Beacon Street onto Charles, I was taking pictures of people hanging out the windows, and the Robinsons spotted us. And there we all stood for a little while, shoulder to shoulder, elbow to elbow, ankle bone, really, for a while there, with the whole world there on Beacon Street. And dressed like this, several people spotted my chalice and said, "Oh, where are you from?" And then told me which Unitarian Universalist congregation they belonged to. And several people said, "You know, I've been meaning to go." So I think there are quite a few Unitarian Universalist congregations across New England this morning who have new people. Those people who've been meaning to go, and it made a difference for them to be shoulder to shoulder with us. A college friend popped out at the edge of the crowd at one point, someone I haven't seen in years, and there she was. We thanked every police person as we walked by them, and they were all so gracious. Did you have this experience when you were? Yeah. I heard one of them talking on the phone, of course, standing there on the street corner and talking on his phone and saying, "Everyone has been so kind to us." And it stayed peaceful and kind, even though people waited for hours. So you're nodding. Oh, boy. So it was a little bit uncomfortable, maybe a lot uncomfortable at moments. And we stayed playful and present and connected to the most profound thing, which was that we were there to stand up for life. It was a fantastic beginning to a long march for compassion and equity and earth care. And here we are again this morning. Some of you have already said to me today that you didn't march yesterday, and there's part of you that wished that you had, or feels the gap of having not gotten to participate in that. So we're here. This is another step in the same march. Shoulder to shoulder, elbow to elbow again. Gathered for hope and inspiration. Gathered to connect ourselves to something that is larger than our own lives, larger than our own fears, larger than our individual possibilities. We're gathered to be part of that force of life that is full of surprises and recreation and a will that is beyond any one of us. I've started to see articles recently about how this moment may actually be a moment for amazing creativity and engagement, that we may be able to make some things happen in this moment, inspired by the urgency of what is happening, that are tremendously positive and that might not have happened without the threat that we now feel. So I'm just going to read those articles from now on. I'll send you the links. And to do that, we have to dig deep. We have to really be disciplined about connecting ourselves to that which is larger than we are. We have to keep refinding our solidarity, our connection in that swirl of activity and life out there. We have to keep finding the goddess in us and the glitter in us. These are indeed anxious days, and it will be easy to get pulled into the anxiety of it, to the noise of it. It is so easy to get pulled into that and to just get sort of just lost in it. And so I think our work as a spiritual community is to keep each other centered and grounded. And maybe I should say, keep returning ourselves to being centered and grounded, connected to the deepest reality and to our best intentions, because I don't know about you, but I lose it every few hours during the day, and I need something and someone beyond me to help me come back. It's one of the reasons I am circulating the UU Declaration of Conscience. I think probably many of you have it tucked into your order of service, and if you don't, your neighbor does. I saw it come by in one of the many electronic forms that things come by in, and signed it immediately, and then noticed that there was an invitation on it to sign as a congregation, to have a collective signing. And then someone in the congregation asked if we could please do that. So I think we'll have a conversation, not right at this moment in time, but in the days, in the near days ahead, about making that collective declaration, signing it as a congregation. Because it's great to sign it as a person, and I invite you to do that. You've got it in a paper form, and you can go online and sign it. And it's different to do it together. It's different to know that we are shoulder to shoulder in this too. Because as people have already said in Joys and Sorrows this morning, we need each other. Together is the only way we will figure out what comes next. So I'm thinking about how do we really keep coming back to that solidarity? How do we get ourselves in that spot where we're really grounded and able to be very public at the same time? It's one of the tensions in probably all religious life. How do you have an internal, spiritual, meditative, centered life and be out in the world trying to shape things? Well, it starts here, in this room, in this hour. It starts with how we spend this time together. So one thing I'll say, and we've certainly shown it today, the resistance is not quiet and orderly. When we were marching yesterday, the chant, "Show me what democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like," kept coming up. And my husband said a couple times, "It is kind of crowded. You're not quite sure where you're going." You're hoping that you're headed in the direction that you want to be headed in, and it's clear that people have some different ideas, because people would head off on side streets and could see people thinking, are we going, where are we? It is what democracy looks like, and we did all head in the same direction, and we did achieve this thing that we set out to do, although it was messy and a little confusing and uncertain and uncomfortable. So that's what it is here, too. Just, it is actually a little quieter here. So it will take patience with each other and a willingness to be in that turmoil of creation. So what that means, I think, is that there will be children's voices in this room. And that is a wonderful gift to us. And we will take those voices in as blessings of that life itself unfolding. As Cahil Gibran says, they are the sons and the daughters of life's longing for itself. We need each other, generations, to be whole and create the future. It's one of these tensions in community life about where it will be quiet and where children will be and where adults will be. And I think in this moment, we need to be together even more and need to hear all the generations together. And on the other end of the spectrum, God is willing, we will all be old one day. We will all have trouble hearing what is happening. And so we all need to get in the practice of helping people who are having trouble hearing and people who maybe have trouble with their balance or are worried that they do. So, of course, that means in coffee hour being thoughtful about having conversations with each other, and it means in this room too. Just being aware and thoughtful of helping each other hear. That's why we use the microphone for Joys and Sorrows, so that everyone can hear, including people who use assisted listening devices. And that's why I move that microphone closer, so that everyone can hear, so that we get each other's stories. The other thing that happens periodically is that those assisted listening devices and people's personal hearing aids interact, and you will hear that ringing sound of a hearing aid. It's feedback, I think. And it happens from time to time, and we all think, I'm not sure what to do, and we don't want anyone to feel bad. So we often sit here for a while wondering what to do. So here's what we'll do. If you can tell that sound is near you, help your neighbors figure out whose hearing aid it is and pass them a note. Because I'm here, there's little pieces of paper everywhere you can write notes on. So just write a little note and say, I think your hearing aid is buzzing. And it may be a moment of fluster, but this is how we work things out together. This is how we're really with each other. Just say, I think this is happening. Can I help you with it? And then it's not something that we're pretending isn't happening, because remembering to act on things, remembering to talk to each other instead of trying to pretend things aren't happening, is part of how we build that capacity to be connected and to stay active with each other. It's the smallest moment that lets us build that muscle of connection is more important than anything else. And finally, for all of us navigating anxiety in the digital age, I propose that we make this room, this hour, a screen-free time. If you are a doctor or another professional who's on call, put your phone on vibrate and tuck it into your pocket. But otherwise, let's say for this time, this worship time, when we're trying to sink into our deepest selves, refine that life-affirming connection, that we won't text or fiddle with those magic screens that do things when you touch them. They're very compelling. And it's the anxiety that keeps us going back to it. So this is a time for us to step back from the anxiety, to just step away. And I don't mean pretend it's not there. I mean, get outside of it enough to notice that that's what's happening, that that's what's driving us a lot of the time these days. Let's breathe together and bring our minds to this moment with these fine people. We are full of resources and wisdom that we cannot Google. Our own inner clarity is more urgent than whatever is on your phone or tablet. I know. I have also gotten back into Twitter these days. During the Occupy movement, I got on Twitter for the first time. And so I have had to just lock up my phone in the mornings so that I'm not tempted to just while I'm in the midst of packing lunches, because the morning does not go well then. So there are so many little moments to train ourselves to be present. The news will definitely be there when you get back to it. I know that my ability to be grounded and focused is what is actually important. And that wavers, that I lose my ability to see what's most important in a moment. So I invite you, as part of being in the resistance, part of being clear and bold about your participation in a life that is larger than your own, that you set aside this time and at least one other time in the week to step away from the news and the Facebook and the Twitter and whatever it is, Instagram, whatever the things are, and the news and communicating with all of the possibilities that are out there. Find a time to settle into your own inner lighthouse and figure out how to let that shine in the world. We practice in 100 small ways every day and mostly don't notice that we're practicing. That we're practicing how to be intentional. That we're practicing speaking up about something that's happening. That we're practicing being connected. In the march yesterday, I noticed that there were young adults who kept starting those chants. Show me what democracy looks like. And I started to notice that one young woman near me was starting to get hoarse. And I thought, oh, so it must be my turn to do what she's doing, to start the chanting instead of just responding to the chanting. And so I started to do that. I started to be the one who said, show me what democracy looks like, instead of the one who answered, this is what democracy looks like. And those call and response moments are very much what democracy looks like. Voices back and forth, figuring out how to do something together, figuring out how to change to another thing. So I realized that I was in that moment in Commonwealth Avenue practicing. It was just a few minutes here and there of leading chanting. But I was practicing stepping in to that role. I was practicing using a bigger voice than I usually am comfortable doing. I was practicing leading a different kind of situation. And at one point, one of the young women of color said to me, thank you, Reverend. Which startled me a little bit, although shouldn't have. And I thought, oh, this is it. This is the practicing. This is the learning to step out a little bit more. So I may just wear these hiking boots now. I really might just wear these hiking boots now. So if I'll see you around town in my boots, you'll know that this is me practicing, being grounded, being ready for the next step in the march, and practicing being a little bigger, shining a little more, so that we can do that together.